League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Everybody, welcome to a special midweek episode of Micro Brew. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, joined on the other line by my colleague, Todd Rosiak. We did not do a normal episode on Monday morning. That was more of a minor league deep dive, and quite simply, it's because I was on vacation, and then some things transpired that made that information out of date before it even reached your ears. So I felt a little obligated, Todd, to come back and talk about a very good week for the Milwaukee Brewers. Six games at home against the Pirates and the Rockies. They won four of them, probably could have won a fifth, but they once again continue to trend in the right direction. They are a playoff team as the season, if the season were to end today, which means they would not play their three-game series against the New York Mets kicking off this road trip. Todd, first of all, it has been a while. How are you doing, sir? We haven't touched base in forever.
Who says you get to go on vacation during Brewer season? That's what I want to know.
Todd, I cover all things. I'm working Packer season, Badger season, Buck season. I got to take it sometime. So we went out west. We went to Disneyland. I saw a bunch of national parks. Todd, it was a lot of it was actually fantastic. It was very draining physically and emotionally, but it was still a really good time.
Well, that sounds good. I'm doing well, just grinding away as I always do, and trying to make sense of this Brewer season. It's been an interesting one.
We are past the halfway point. It is July. And so I did think it was important to check in with where they're at, because things have gone very well. They've gotten hot. That has been sustained now for over a month. And they are the number two team in the wild card standings. They are just two games back of the Chicago Cubs in the National League Central standings. I am really surprised to see them there. This has gone a little differently than past seasons, where they get off to a hot start and fizzle a little, but maintain that, you know, where they stand to some degree. In this case, they started slow and have gotten off the schneid. And Todd, we're going to do this a little differently because we'll go back, because this is sort of a midweek catch up. We'll just keep this short and kind of treat it like a little bit of a three up, three down, where we just go back and forth and fire off some topics here that caught our attention during this week, this very good week of baseball. Again, in which they won four of six. I did want to point out, if you listen to the minor league pod last week, there were some minor league injuries that sort of colored I had Marco Dingis. He was one of my guests on the show. He unfortunately suffered a hamstring injury on Sunday, just as that episode was about to drop. So all that glowing talk of Marco Dingis, it can still be glowing. He's just going to miss a few weeks with this injury. Probably fortunate it wasn't worse. And then Brock Wilkin getting hurt, breaking his kneecap in a celebration with Biloxi Shuckers. Definitely keeping him from going to AAA. We talked about, he's going to go to AAA soon and we'll get to see him. Yeah, well, now we have to wait a little bit. So, again, there were some developments that made that not as timely as I would have liked. But this is timely.
Is that called the JR Jinx?
I think we can call it that. I mean, I was in the clear right up until the final hours before that thing landed, when Marco Dingis was perfectly healthy. He was doing fine. Okay. And then he had a non-contact injury. That's great.
The kiss of death.
It seems like it. But the Brewers, I've been trying, you know, the way I talk about them, you could argue I've been trying to give them the kiss of death all season long and say, well, this is just not as good a team as past teams. And now here they are, very much in the thick of things, 10 games above 500. And I think, like I said, we'll go back and forth. We'll do it three up, three down style without the actual, I guess, bells and whistles of calling it three up, three down. And the first thing is that I think part of the reason this has been so successful for them is Joey Ortiz, you know, at the bottom of the lineup. And it's not just Joey Ortiz. You could say it's Caleb Durbin as well, who has had a pretty productive last month of the season. I think he had a 795 OPS himself in June. But Joey Ortiz is just a different player in June. He was in the 400s OPS. He had a 748 in June. He's hitting the ball for power. He had a two home run game this past week. He made some very good defensive plays along the way. He had a defensive play, quite honestly, on Sunday in a game that the Brewers ended up losing that turned into an error, but it was a really slick fielding play. And I think he should have gotten a lot more credit for it than just simply the error. It seems like his shortstop play, it was already solid, and now it's gotten really good. And Todd, I wonder if you think there's something, what that is. I mean, is they didn't have a lot of alternatives, so I don't think there was necessarily pressure that they would move on from Joey Ortiz, not move on fully, but like send him down, get him right, find somebody to take his place. They didn't have that guy, so maybe it's just as simple as 2 weeks, 2 months went by and he finally found it. But like, there was a long stretch going back to last year where Ortiz was struggling, and now I think we're finally seeing the version of Joey Ortiz that the Brewers expected. What has changed for him? He's just hitting the ball harder. He looks very different this month.
Yeah, I mean, it's we ask these questions every day, every week, and you know, a lot of it is minutia. I think it's just an example or a case of a guy who has finally kind of found his sweet spot at the plate. It's taken him a while. You know, as you mentioned, it stretched back to last season. He's starting to look like the Joey Ortiz that won Rookie of the Month last year. May going into June, if I remember that correctly. You know, a guy that hit 11 homers, drove in 60 runs. This is more like the guy that the Brewers expected from the start of the season. And it's been a long, slow climb for him. It's been interesting kind of watching the, you know, we'll talk about this with Yelich too, I'm sure, but just watching those averages that were so far below 200 a month ago, now creeping up, and he's, Ortiz is well north of the dreaded Mendoza line. And confidence plays a big role in this as well. You know, starting to get some consistent success at the plate, consecutive multi-hit games, putting together a hitting streak. That all, like anybody can relate to, that just bodes well to, you know, giving you confidence that you can do it and you can sustain it. So you look at the bottom of the lineup over the last month, I think it's a big reason, one of the big reasons why the Brewers have done so well. Isaac Collins been playing great. Caleb Durbin been playing great. Joey Ortiz playing great. So that's, you know, two rookies, and one young player in Ortiz who, you know, have consistently been getting it done in a area of the lineup that was just an absolute desolate black hole for the first 2 months of the season.
I want to let you talk more about Christian Yelich, because it's also like, yes, bottom third of the order is much better. The batting, the lineup is now complete, and it certainly helps to have a guy at number three who's like just killing the ball. I mean, you go back to, I think it's like May 22nd or something. We're well over a month. He has an OPS over 1.080 since in their last 31 games. The Brewers have won 21 of those. That's MVP caliber Christian Yelich. That is 2018, 2019 Christian Yelich. And he's got 9 homers in that stretch. He is eight. He's got a 12-game hitting streak. He's on base all the time, and that is certainly something that's contributing. So Christian Yelich, I think, you know, maybe we're finally seeing fully healthy. Like, back surgery's in the rearview mirror. I don't know, but he's playing at a level that honestly could get himself into the MVP conversation if he were somehow able to sustain this.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch, and you know, hats off to him. As everybody knows that follows the Brewers over the years, that he's been on the Brewers and you know, listened to his interviews, read what he's had to say. There's really not a more steady as she goes guy than Christian Yelich. There's nothing that's going to get him too up. There's nothing that's going to get him too down. And, you know, in the dregs of his struggles back in mid-May or so, you know, it was just kind of like, hey, this is baseball. You know, it's up and down. It's peaks and valleys. You just got to ride them out. And, you know, lo and behold, a month later, the guy's tearing the cover off the ball. You know, I'm just looking at, again, you know, day-by-day statistics on after an 0-for-5, May 21st, he was sitting at 184, And, you know, fast forward to today, Tuesday, July 1st, 262. 794 OPS, 16 homers, 60 RBI. Let's go back again to May 21st. You know, what was he at? 28 RBI or something like that, 30 RBI. It's been remarkable what he's done. And, you know, throwing that into the mix along with the bottom of the order, as we talked about, you know, Bryce Terang has been hitting well. It's really been a complete offensive unit from top to bottom. And to have your MVP caliber player, you know, your stalwart, your foundation piece, whatever you want to say, you know, kind of setting the tone for everybody, I think it is good. And I think that's what everybody was kind of expecting and hoping coming out of that back surgery last year. And now he's back. So we'll see if, obviously, he's not going to be able to sustain this level of play over the course of the rest of the season, but he's on pace for, you know, 30 plus homers, well over 100 RBI. I think going into the year, if anybody, you know, would have thrown that out there as a possibility, 100% would have said, heck yeah, sign us up for that. So it's been a remarkable resurgence, and hats off to him for, you know, staying with it and not getting too depressed at the lack of results over the first couple months. And now he's getting paid dividends for that.
Very quietly, sixth in the National League in RBIs with 60. I don't really keep track of that stat as much as I used to, but and he's doing it in fewer games than all the guys ahead of him. All right, what's one thing on your list that you wanted to discuss?
Well, I mean, how can we not talk about Miz and Skeens, that matchup from last week? It was remarkable. I was trying to think back to, you know, in my 15 years on the beat, certainly, you know, there's been some pretty good starting pitchers for the Brewers. Ben Sheets precedes me, so I, you know, covering the team, so I can't really speak to that. But I don't ever remember, and I think I'm pretty accurate in saying that, there's ever been this level of, like, can't miss type talent, a player that you have to see, a pitcher that you have to watch every time he takes the mound. And, you know, Miz checks those boxes. You know, I covered the first game against the Cardinals, his debut. I was fortunate enough to be in Minnesota with that insane start, taking a perfect game into the seventh inning. And then the Skeens game, which was again, off the charts. It's been remarkable, eye-opening, fun, exciting, I'm sure, for all the fans and for the franchise. And I've been saying that, you know, this is the first time, certainly, that I've ever covered a pitcher like this who, as I'm keeping score during the course of the game, inning by inning, I'm taking the one of the little unused squares at the bottom of the Brewers portion of the lineup every inning to denote how many 100-mile-an-hour pitches Miz throws. It's amazing, you know, and to count that that total up. When I was in Minnesota last week and to see that total 29, you're like, wow, this is a special kind of talent. So that Miz Skeens game was a lot of fun. You know, Brewers obviously won. They put up four runs against Skeens. Not a lot of hard contact in that inning, but hey, runs are runs, and they did win that game. So, you know, we're recording this podcast going into his start against the Mets, and that's going to be a fun one to watch as well. I think with the, you know, the New York media and under the bright lights in New York, that's going to be fun to see how he reacts. I will say a couple of things, just kind of a couple of observations. Number one, he's handled all the attention really well. You know, he's a nice kid, very well-spoken, very congenial. And I haven't gotten any sense that the moment has been too big for him yet. Now, if I rewind to spring training 2024, his first big league camp, you know, there was certainly, you know, the wide eyes and like, wow, am I really here? Which you would expect out of any young player. I don't sense that anymore. You know, he just goes about his business, keeps his head down. He's doing everything he needs to do. He's checking all the boxes. The other thing that's interesting about the Miz is perhaps unprecedented. Certainly can't ever think of a time while I was covering the team. I think I don't want to say it's unprecedented in Major League Baseball because I know there are other teams that have done this in the past, but it's pretty rare. The Brewers are now putting restrictions on talking to Miz for the media. The rules are for the foreseeable future, he will speak the day before he starts, and then immediately after he starts that night. And then beyond that, we have been told he is off limits to speak to. This is a directive that's coming from the upper reaches of the organization. I certainly understand where they're coming from, you know, wanting to try to protect him and, you know, try to shield him from all this stuff. The reporter in me, you know, quite honestly, I'm kind of rolling my eyes a little bit at it. I mean, this guy's an adult. He's a major league player. Attention is part of the deal when it comes to playing in the major leagues. You know, he's certainly within his rights if he doesn't want to talk, to tell the media he doesn't want to talk. But, you know, that being said, taking the restrictions out of the mix, you know, it's been fun to watch. It's been exciting. It adds a layer, I think, for everybody, from the media to the people who work in the ballpark to the fans, certainly, of excitement that just has not been around in a long time, very long time. So, you know, JR, you can throw your two cents in. I know you're on vacation for at least part of those, at least one or two of those starts, but it's been fun, and I look forward to covering many more of his starts as we go along.
Yes, the Miz rules have been instituted for now. I'm fine with those if they're temporary. I get it. You know, there is a lot of attention on him, people wanting to talk to him every day. I get it for now. We'll see how that progresses. Three hits and three wins is just an astounding feat. You know, like, I don't even know how that's possible. And you try, you know, try to before the season envision a scenario where the Pirates could be playing the Brewers in a midweek day game, and you have the biggest crowd of the year. Like, what circumstances could possibly create that? You know, you'd have to say, well, it's the last game of the season, and if they win, they go to the playoffs, right? Like, that's the only way you can envision that happening. But Skeens versus Miz, an unreal opportunity to see two of the, you know, maybe full stop the two best young pitchers in baseball. I'm sure there are others who have a case there. Chase Burns with the Reds, who had a very good debut as well, although not as good a second start. Just incredible. You know, the Brewers won the way they have to, which is to, like, scratch and claw. They found a way to get four runs against Skeens in one inning. It took some breaks. It took some hustle and grit. That's just very Brewers-y of them. And then they end up winning the game. Great bullpen work behind Mizorowski as well. I'm curious to know how often they use him over the course of a game. Like, are we going to I think we probably should expect five innings and not much more under most circumstances going forward, as they try to keep his limit, you know, his innings somewhat in check over the course of the season. I wonder if they skip him once or twice as the season progresses to try and, you know, like, keep him fresh. He's going to be going probably well beyond any sort of innings load that he has worked in previous seasons. And he's a weapon unlike anything they've ever had before. It's really crazy. I was going to an Angels game. It was the first time I was at Angels Stadium in Anaheim on this day. This was scheduled months and months ago. I could not have foreseen that I would be experiencing massive FOMO while in a stadium for the first time in my life, paying attention to what is going on back home in Milwaukee. It was very annoying. There was that. And then I was also literally in the Rockies while the Brewers were playing the Rockies coming back from California. So there was a lot going on involved.
What did you think about Angels Stadium?
It's fine. It's cool. It's pretty low key, I think, for you know, what you would expect. I've never been to Dodger Stadium either. That is still the case, you know, it's fine. I have nothing bad to say about it. I would, you know, it doesn't move me the way that, you know, like PNC Park or
very pedestrian, in my opinion. I will say, last year when the Brewers played there, Adam McAlvey and I got lost or stuck in the bowels of the stadium, and we had to be escorted out and left through the main gate by a very nice visiting clubhouse manager at about midnight, the last night of the second game of the series. So that'll always be a lasting memory for me of Angel Stadium.
Fantastic. The Brewers will go back there next year. Cool. You say Kikuchi had a very good game. It was still not Jacob Mizorowski versus Paul Skeens. That was my first impression of Angel Stadium. So my next thought here that I really wanted to touch on was speaking of guys pitching great, it's Quinn Priester. A one-hitter? The Brewers, once again, have multiple one-hitters this year. He throws another incredible seven innings against the Rockies in a 5-0 shutout victory for the Brewers. A couple relievers combined thereafter to cap off the one-hitter. And Quinn Priester is quite simply a revelation. I mean, that's not entirely new. But the Brewers have won his last six starts. Even go back to his last seven starts, that's a 2.06 ERA. He is not walking anyone. He was having so much trouble with walks. And you know, that's part of why things just didn't work out in Pittsburgh. And he's just a completely different pitcher. And Todd, I would say that even visually, like, even watching him pitch looks different. He's got an energy that's different. I know we get into vibes. You know, it gets a little subjective fast, but, like, he looks so confident. He looks, you know, he's laughing out there. There's the play he makes where he kind of tipped a ball to himself, you know, where he, like, had it, fumbled it, and then kind of caught it with the bare hand, and he's laughing about it, like, laughing on the way down almost. He seemed so confident and comfortable out there. And it's showing in the results. I mean, he's gone from a guy that I'm pretty sure is going to get sent down to AAA at some point this year to being like, well, he's their number three pitcher right now behind Freddie and Mizorowski. There's other guys that you have to consider if you're going to make a move to the rotation. The rotation is just completely solidified here. And, you know, I have to admit the Brewers know what they're doing. Like, how can you not? They clearly know what they're doing in pitching development. They have a huge success story on their hands for now. And that's going to be one of the reasons this team has taken a turn for the better, in that their rotation has been so solid. And a guy that they got for what looked like a pretty healthy price tag at the time, it turns out it is exactly what they should have paid for a guy who can do what he can do in the rotation. So Quinn Priester every day is turning into somebody that they can rely on for six. You know, he's not like going four innings or five innings. He's going six innings, like five of those last seven starts, I think, six or more innings. He's just been really solid. Incredible work by the Brewers development team and incredible work by Quinn Priester himself.
Yeah, sticking with the pitching, I would say that Brandon Woodruff looking like he's going to slot back into the rotation in Miami this coming weekend. Again, you can't spell media without me and I. And since I am going to be in Miami, I am excited about that, because what a storybook way to return. The same ballpark, the same mound where Brandon Woodruff last pitched in late September of 2023 before injuring his shoulder. You know, that was the final place of his final start, to kind of come full circle. It's been a long road for him, obviously, a lot of twists and turns, a lot of stops and starts along the way. You know, had it not been for that bad luck, he would have been back a couple weeks ago, getting hit in the elbow in his final, what was supposed to be his final rehab start in the minor leagues. But, you know, now we are coming up on it, and it will be interesting to see what he will do, what he can do, what he is able to do, how the Brewers handle him. And, you know, as a media member, obviously objective, the outcomes don't really mean anything to me. I always tell people I root for a good story. Well, this is a good story, and I'm rooting for a good story. Brandon Woodruff's a really good guy, and he deserves, you know, good things. And I certainly hope that his return to the mound goes well, and I hope that, that the rest of his time with the Brewers goes well, assuming that, you know, however many starts he makes here over the course of the rest of the season will probably be it for him in a Brewers uniform. I don't know that for certain, just guessing. But, you know, they don't come much nicer, much more dedicated than Brandon Woodruff. So I'm hoping his return in Miami goes as well as everybody hopes it does.
The really important number was to see that velocity tick back up, that he was able to hit as high as 90, I think 94, 95 in his last rehab start. Because that was the concern. Even before a ball hit his elbow, he just wasn't getting those numbers. He wasn't getting big league velocity. And it was enough to the point that you'd have to question whether he is able and ready to come back. Now, I just said, you got to trust the Brewers pitching approach. They seem to understand just about every aspect of this. And I'm sure that if he pitches, he will have been vetted. They will be ready to see that happen. What about the results, though, in that last minor league start? They were pretty bad, and I know that they don't care about results, but still, like, he's facing big league caliber hitters, and you know, some command problems and stuff. Now the minor league strike zone is a little tighter than the big league strike zone, perhaps. But does that worry you at all? Now that we're going to go right from that outing into presumably his first outing in over, you know, in a year and a half at this point.
No, I mean, the two things. You know, number one, the velocity. You know, Pat Murphy has talked a lot over the course of the season about just how different it is at the, you know, doing minor league rehab appearances versus pitching in a big league game. And I buy that 100%. You know, guys are just not going to ramp it up and let it loose because the environment isn't there. You know, like, they're there. Brandon Woodruff is there to get his pitches in, to work on his stuff. The velo, the results really don't matter. And that answers your second question. Not worried about the results either. You know, if Brandon Woodruff really was, you know, hey, you know, I got to throw a no hitter. I can't, you know, I got to throw a shutout. I'm sure the numbers would have been better. You know, would that have happened? I don't know, but he's there strictly to get his pitch count up, to make sure he's got the feel of all of his pitches, and to come out of that thing feeling healthy and feeling mentally like he's in a good place. And it sounds like he's checked all those boxes. So now let's see what happens once he gets back to the major leagues. My sense is that we're going to see that velocity definitely tick up. You know, number one, because he's back on a big league mound, but number two, you know, he's going to let it loose. I'm sure he wasn't letting it loose completely anytime he was taking the mound in the minor league. So We'll see how it goes. But there's no question, I think, that Brandon Woodruff is going to have to be a different pitcher. than he was before he got hurt, where he could rely on, you know, dialing up and you know, hitting 99 and blowing guys away. He's not necessarily going to be able to do that anymore. Now he's got to work with a more, you know, kind of a more refined approach. He's going to have to be more of a pitcher, and that's not a bad thing. I certainly think that's well within his capabilities to do. And if he comes back as, you know, not the big Woo of old, but a guy that's close to being the big Woo of old, now you're talking about a pretty darn good rotation going down the stretch.
So here's maybe another question, a concern more than a celebration of how great this team has been. And that is the bullpen. We did see them blow a game. Orlando Arcia, old friend. Orlando Arcia with a two-out home run against Trevor Megill to tie the game in the ninth. I honestly thought, you know, the Brewers had chances and extras. The offense didn't do enough in that particular game, and I honestly thought the Brewers were lucky to be winning at that point. They had been dramatically out-hit. It took, you know, Christian Yelich had a home run, but it, like, barely got over the wall. Like, I felt like they were lucky to be ahead 2-1, and then it just kind of got away from them at the end. But not so much of Megill, although I guess you could throw him in here as well. But like Jared Koenig has struggled this year at times and looks, you know, he just kind of looks tired. His whip is getting pretty high. Abner Uribe has been touched up a little bit lately. It still feels like their bullpen is perfectly capable. And probably most of these guys, I would think, are going to still be here when they get into crunch time, when they get into the September part of the schedule. But what are your thoughts on the bullpen? Does it feel to you that there are maybe some, like, you know, some cracks in the foundation that they might need and probably will at the trade deadline add at least one more arm, or they might need to make an adjustment or two as things go along here?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that, you know, on any team, any given year, the bullpen is just a constantly evolving area. And the Brewers have been so good in relief over previous years. And, you know, the bullpen's been pretty good this year overall. I think what you're probably seeing right now is, you know, the net result of guys being overworked and ridden hard early in the season. You know, Nick Mears has come back to earth somewhat. You mentioned Jared Koenig. You know, Abner Uribe has had, a few blips on the radar screen here and there. So, you know, these are all the guys that have been heavily, heavily used. And, you know, over the course of time, it's going to take its toll. So, you know, the Brewers have certainly shown a propensity to want to bolster the bullpen every year going into the trade deadline. Unfortunately for them, that secret sauce has not worked out so well. We have to go back all the way to, 2019 and Drew Pomeranz to find a reliever that they picked up at the deadline that actually pitched well for them. It's honestly been that long.
Well, we're counting Nick Mears. We can count Nick Mears as somewhat of a slump after a little bit.
Yeah, but he was not good last year until the playoffs. Let's not remember. He was terrible. until that Mets series. So, you know, he's been good this year, obviously. But as far as difference makers down the stretch, it's been a while. So I certainly would anticipate the Brewers to look to bolster the bullpen if they can do so. I would just wonder if they would want to check their mathematic equations and their their algorithms a little bit, maybe tweak those to make sure that they're able to actually acquire somebody that does some good for them this year rather than what's happened the past few years.
Yeah, that's I mean, we're a month away from the trade deadline. We're there. So we can as these podcasts go forward, I'm sure we'll be talking about trades. And, you know, is there still a scenario on the table where they would make a bold move trading from their major league roster with, like, Freddie Peralta? I don't think so anymore, but I guess I don't know. The Tigers pulled that off last year under slightly different circumstances, and it worked out for them. One thought would be third base still. You know, Caleb Durbin has been better this month, as we've talked about. And, you know, there's a guy like Suarez from the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Eugenio?
So bad at that name. It always trips me up. It's like Platoon for Kurt Hoag's Platoon. Suarez for Arizona. He's going to be an awfully hot commodity, though. He's got 26 home runs. I mean, he's just mashing this year. And I don't know if the Brewers are going to dig in on that. But there is also a possibility that they get something from Anthony Siegler, who is supposedly, reportedly, coming up to the big league team here. And I don't know for sure where, you know, I don't know if how Anthony Siegler fits exactly. I feel like as we record this, we don't know the roster move to go with it. That means probably Andrew Monasterio is headed back to AAA, but that leaves him without a backup shortstop. So that's interesting. Give me your thoughts here, Todd, on Anthony Siegler and how he would fit if he is indeed coming up to the Brewers. where he would fit precisely, and if Siegler is the type of guy you think could be here for the rest of the season.
To me, the most important or most interesting thing about him is, you know, people can do their research. And that was one of the stories that I really was wanting to write during spring training, and it never really presented itself. But former first-round pick of the Yankees, this is a guy that can throw with either hand or throw with either arm. I mean, he's a switch hitter, came up as a catcher, but he can play second base. He can play third base. And he's had a good year in Nashville. So the thing, you know, you talk about the trade deadline and wanting to improve the team. I was talking with somebody a couple days ago about when you look at the Brewers this year, look at their bench and just look at the complete lack of contributions they've gotten from their bench this season.
They barely use them.
They have three guys on the team right now that literally never play. I mean, one of them, Eric Haas, which is a backup catcher, you kind of expect that, but Andrew Monasterio, I'm not even kidding you. I was covering the game Sunday, and they did a, you know, something on the scoreboard in between innings, and Andrew Monasterio was on the scoreboard, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, yeah, he's still on the team. Like, literally, that's how little impact he's had. And, you know, they're just not getting – Daz Cameron, another guy, just never, ever plays. To me, they're going to need to bolster at least one of those spots, if not two of them, moving forward. They're going to need a backup shortstop, because that's why Andrew Monasterio is on the team, because he can play shortstop. That's the only other guy. You know, if Siegler could play shortstop, hey, maybe that'd be a little bit more exciting. But at this point, why not roll Siegler out there, see what he can do? The switch hitting helps. You know, he's versatile. See what happens. Maybe they catch lightning in a bottle. More than likely, they don't, and they look to do something else. Daz Cameron, probably not long for the Brewers with Blake Perkins getting near the end of his minor league rehab stint, and that's a guy that everybody expected to be back much sooner than he will be. But once he comes back, there's another switch hitter off the bench, fast. We all know about his defense. That'll be a really nice addition too.
11 at-bats Andrew Monasterio had in the month of June. It's 12 going back to like May 27th. I mean, that is – I was going to try to look see how many at-bats Eric Haas had in the month of June. I think it's even fewer. Well, maybe it's not. I think he's got 13 maybe. So
– yeah, well, so, I mean, if you look it up, I can't remember, but he had that double that he had against – it was some crazy like stretch between hits and I mean, it's literally mind boggling to see how little the Brewers reserves actually play, aside from, you know, an occasional start from Jake Bowers or an occasional pinch hit appearance.
All right. You wrote about William Contreras on that landed at jsonline.com on Monday. Why don't you talk about what we've seen from him? This is the guy who's not hitting the ball very hard. And we've talked about the finger injury in the past. He's taking walks. He's very accomplished defensively still, but he is struggling, including in extra innings when he popped out against the Rockies there on Sunday when he came up in a big spot. So it feels like this is just not going away with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of is what it is. It's what it's going to be for the rest of the season. I thought his comments were pretty illuminating, pretty enlightening. You know, he's still in pain. That pain is likely not going to go away until the off season when he's actually able to heal that finger, rest that finger and let it heal. But you know, what are the Brewers options at this point? You know, at the very least, he is playing really good defense. He's throwing base runners out, calling good games. You know, he still brings an edge to the team. Even if he's not hitting like the, you know, the silver slugger, William Contreras, you're still getting contributions from him. You know, he's still a valuable contributor, and to me, you just, you know, you kind of got to let him roll and hope that at some point he gets on a little bit of a tear. You know, I mentioned the, you know, the Christian Yelich thing in the story. I think it's unlikely that he goes on the kind of tear that Christian Yelich is on right now, but who knows, maybe he can catch lightning in a bottle and, you know, have a good stretch of a few weeks where he starts hitting the ball harder, starts hitting the ball out of the ballpark a little bit. You know, it's just kind of one of those things that, you know, you can't control injuries. You can't control the timing of injuries. I do tip my hat to him for wanting to play through this, because I think a lot of guys probably would have cashed it in and been like, eh, you know, I got to go on the IL. I got to let this thing heal up. Let's be clear. This is not something that's surgical. It's not something that they can go in there and fix surgically or that they need to. It literally just, he needs to have time off. To give him that time off, are you going to give him 2 months? You know, like, that's not really feasible at this point. So they're kind of in a trick box, tough situation for him. They're just going to have to let him kind of, you know, deal with the pain, grit his teeth, and keep playing every day and hope that things, you know, kind of turn out by the end of the season. He's pretty confident that he's going to put up numbers. You know, he told me that several times that, oh, my numbers will be there, my numbers will be there. We all know he's a confident guy. I don't know how realistic that is, but still, you know, valuable guy to have in the lineup every day, in my opinion.
Okay, well, the All-Star game is coming up. We're really getting down to the nitty-gritty. The Brewers do not have any finalists for a starting position after getting a couple guys, Contreras and Yelich, on that list last year. And I don't know who the Brewers All-Star representative or representatives will be at all. I have no idea. I would have thought Freddie at one point. I would have thought maybe Terang has a chance, but Brendan Donovan and I guess Ketel Marte kind of have that backup spot, I would think, locked down. You've got, McGill? I truly am baffled as to, like, there are a lot of half candidates, I guess, but not anybody that really, like, jumps out as, well, that guy has to be on the team. It's probably still Peralta. But who's going to represent the Brewers, do you think, in the Midsummer Classic?
Yeah, I think Freddie's a pretty good bet at this point. And, you know, I haven't really looked at the rest of the positions. To me, the way Yelich has really kind of surged in the last month, I don't know what the outfield situation looks like. It would not surprise me to see him end up as a reserve just based on his run production and everything, which would be, you know, kind of cool. I don't know necessarily that he would play more than an inning in the outfield. If it came down to that, you know, there's different ways you can kind of configure their lineups and whatnot. But that would really be, to me, a great story is Yelich getting back after the back surgery, and that'd be two in a row for him. So I think an outside shot at that. But to me right now, looking at the numbers, I think Freddie is probably pretty much the no-brainer. That would be my guess.
We're going to see a lot of alumni coming to the stadium in July. And we found out this week, actually don't remember the timeline, but I think it was this past week, the Prince Fielder was going to be among those competing in this home run derby. I love this idea. The Brewers really are really smart to do this. I love the idea of an alumni home run derby. A lot of former players were already going to be there. Yovani Gallardo is among those competing. Nigel Morgan is among those competing. Nigel Morgan does not hit home runs, even in his playing days. So this is going to be certainly, some of the quotes indicated that he is not lacking for confidence. That should surprise nobody who remembers Tony Plush. But Prince is going to be there. Ryan Braun's going to be there. It's going to be just a really great time. It's a weird time. 3 o'clock start on a Friday against the Marlins later this month. But I love this idea. I love that Prince is going to be there. Who you got? Prince? Thames? I mean, who do you think is – maybe there's a sneaky third option that I'm not thinking of. Who do you think, Todd?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the first two guys you listed there are pretty good guesses. You have to think that Prince Fielder is still as competitive as all get out. So he's probably the prohibitive favorite, although we have seen Eric Thames on occasion at the ballpark. And every time they flash him up on the scoreboard, he looks even more jacked and muscled up than he was when he was a player, if that's possible. So there's no doubt in my mind he can still put a charge into the ball as well. And, you know, some of these other guys, you know, that are coming back too, it's going to be fun. I was exchanging text messages a couple days ago with Eddie Cedar. He's going to be pitching. He's throwing to George Kataris. That to me is going to be the fun of it, is just seeing a lot of these old faces, having guys coming back that you really liked, you know, to cover as a journalist, fans who they, you know, guys that they loved watching when they were playing for the Brewers. That's the cool part of all this. So it's going to kind of be like old home week. And, I'm lucky. Kurt's lucky. You know, when these guys come back with different teams later on in their careers, after they leave the Brewers, you know, we can always go over to the visiting clubhouse and say hi and kind of reminisce a little bit. But this is going to be special because it's all, you know, these guys are all done playing now. This is all about the Brewers and everything. So I think it's going to be a really cool day. And I think we made the schedule, Kurt and I, before we knew this was happening. And it just so happened that I'm off that day, but I'm definitely coming in to work. Just like I did for Miz and Skeens, by the way, I was not on the schedule And I came into work because of the specialness of that occasion. So I will do that once again for this home run derby.
We are so honored, Todd, that you are willing to step up for those big moments. That's good stuff, though. I wouldn't want to miss that either. I think I am not around. I think I will be following my only other team that I support more than covering Brewers baseball, and that is my son's youth traveling baseball team that will, I believe, be gone that weekend in Iowa. Back to Iowa I go. So I'm going to miss out, I think. So just a couple other notes. Dave Parker, the former Brewers player, obviously better known for his time with the Pittsburgh Pirates. He passed away. He's just been inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And unfortunately will not make it to induction, but he was a all-star, speaking of all-stars, for the Brewers, 1990, I believe, as a designated hitter. Really one of my first all-star game memories is seeing Dave Parker get announced and, you know, not really even being sure who he was, actually. I feel that was the case when I was younger. But he was pretty good that one season with the Brewers, hit the last season of his career. So that was kind of a bummer. And yeah, I mean, this team, they catch the Mets, who are really struggling right now. They catch the Mets at a really good time. I feel like that's been the case lately. Their schedule has relented. They caught the Twins at a really good time, I thought, and ended up sweeping them. You know, the Pirates have been bad all year. The Rockies have been bad all year. It's a shame they didn't get to sweep the Rockies. Only won 4 of 6. That seems great, except, you know, you see how many games they've won. It looks disappointing. But, man, 2 games behind the Cubs and a game and a half up on the nearest threat in that wild card. That's just not something I expected. Todd, I'm blown away that the Brewers have gotten to this point, and it is it's just going to be one of those summers again. It's going to be another fun summer. Do you see, as you just think about it in the grand scheme, like, can they keep this up? Because they've had to play extraordinary baseball to get to this point, which is in the mix, not even like at the top, but in the mix. They're not going to play that way all season long. Do you think this team has the gas to keep going and maybe sneak in the wild card, maybe even catch the Cubs? I don't know. What are you thinking?
I think they do. I really think they do. I if you can keep Yelich, again, it's not going to be this can't keep up all season, but if you can keep him relatively hot and a consistent run producer, that's big. The pitching is going to be huge as well. We've talked about the starting pitching at length. That's always big. So I do think they have it in them. It's going to be fun to watch as we come down the stretch. I don't think anybody expected the NL Central to be as strong as it's turned out to be. You know, the Cubs have obviously been at the top all season. They're very well balanced, but the Cardinals have been shockingly good. Everybody had written them off. You know, they're playing extremely well. The Reds are now starting to play well, and they've got great pitching too. So it's a very strong division from top to bottom. And, you know, you mentioned the Mets and this road trip. This is going to be a very interesting road trip to me, because you've got the Mets, who are just absolutely desperate right now for wins, and they're coming off just being absolutely embarrassed at home by the Pirates. It was in Pittsburgh, my mistake. But again, absolutely embarrassed by the Pirates in that 3-game series. I think outscored 30-4, just incredible. So that's a desperate Mets team, and then you're going down to Miami to face a Marlins team that's been on absolute fire. You know, a bunch of nobodies, a team that I defy anybody to name me the starting nine for the Miami Marlins. It would be very hard to do, except for the most hardcore of fans, baseball fans. That's going to be a very difficult series as well. So let's see how this week turns out, and I think that'll be a good barometer of how you know, what to expect here going into the All-Star break and then coming out of it.
I don't think Jesse Winker will be back off his rehab assignment. He's working his way back from an injury. I don't think the Brewers will see him this week. Maybe that last game, I'm not sure. But we'll see another Mizorowski start, and then Brandon Woodruff maybe in Miami. It sounds like it. That's going to be good. Interesting to know how they change the rotation around. Chad Patrick is probably the odd man out after, you know, he's been struggling, but struggling in a way that hasn't been giving up a lot of runs. So it's sort of a bummer that somebody like that would potentially be the odd man out. But we'll see what happens. Who knows? There's a lot of things could happen even by the end of this week. Todd, that's going to do it. Thank you for joining me on this sort of fill in the gaps episode, this mid-level episode. We'll be back with our with a full Monday roundup with Kurt Hoge again on Sunday into Monday. Thank you again, Todd. We'll talk to you again very soon.
All right, GR, always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Check us out at jsonline.com. Kurt will be there in New York for the 3 games against the Mets. Todd will be there in Miami for the series against the Marlins. Take care, everyone.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.